Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations with Renee. This is Thursday, October 1st, 2009, and it's 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it is October 1st, folks, because I'm cold. But that's all right. I enjoy fall. I'm your host, Yolanda Renee, and I'm coming to you live from Pennsylvania, the place where many exciting and unbelievable things happen. Tonight's show is all about writing. I have a few hints and tips, and I'm hoping that you'll call in with your questions or suggestions at 347-215-9536. Remember, if you have a question, hit the 1 key. I'll see your number and cue you in. The click-to-talk function is also available, so test it out tonight. That's fine with me. And if you have any questions about my shows, please email me, at YolandaRenee@hotmail.com. Thank you for being here tonight. I know tonight's show was advertised as a conversation with Tom Futrell, a.k.a. T.G. Reaper, you know, the Grim Reaper. But Tom had some technical difficulties and could not rely on his computer connection or his phone connection. He just moved, and he's still trying to get things sorted out. So what I've done is rescheduled him, and he will appear on the show with all his horror writings and poetry on October 15th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard. He will be here along with his friend Cynthia Parker. She is a beautiful poet, and she just had two recent releases, books of poetry called Spectrum and Origins. So just as her writing is beautiful and breathtaking, Tom's is horrific and frightening, and I think it's a wonderful combination, especially since Tom is also a poet. So folks, put the 15th on your calendar and join us again. But I appreciate the fact that you showed up tonight, so I've decided to do a show on writing and publishing. I have a collection of hints, tips, suggestions, and just good information that all writers need or could use, I think. But my invitation to you is call in and share yours. On the agenda tonight, I have some of the following, and whether we get to it all or not, that's up to you. But I have 10 rules for writing opinion pieces, what I've learned in my publishing journey, how to write good dialogue, and we all could use a lesson in that, I think, how to write a synopsis. Probably writing a synopsis is one of the hardest things to do. I mean, you took how long to write a novel worth, what, 70 to 100-some-thousand words, and you can't write a short synopsis telling everyone what it's about? You know, I found that to be one of the hardest things, but there are some great tips, and I'll try to pass those on to you tonight. There's also a few marketing tips that I've gathered together, and hopefully you'll find those interesting as well. And I have a short story. If everyone gets bored, I can read a short story called Red Ribbons. I used to love listening to the old radio shows, you know, the mystery shows with all the characters and the sound effects, and I miss those. And so this won't be anything like that, folks, because I don't have any sound effects and I don't have a lot of characters reading parts. But it might be fun all the same if we get to it. So if you have anything you want to talk about, call in. Like I said, the number's 347-215-9536. And we can talk about your latest project, give out your website, and give us a good tip on what you've learned on your publishing journey, one that worked for you, because, folks, we want to learn things that are going to work for us, too. I see that there is a caller online, so I'm going to open it up and see who's there. Hello, caller 517. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Oh, Renee, I just wanted to tell you, I think you and your show are just absolutely awesome, and I love what you do, and for your time and just bringing writers to helping us to know about different writers and that, and I just love the fact what you do. And I would very much love to hear your story, Red Ribbons. I really would, for one. So, but it was just no questions at present. I just wanted to say thank you so much for your show and
well, can I ask your first name at least and say thank you? That's quite a compliment.
My name is Cindy, and I listen to some of your archives sometime. I'm not currently set up at home with a computer or anything yet, so when I'm down at the library, I listen in sometimes to the archives, and this is my second time calling in and listening. So,
I appreciate that, Cindy. Thank you so much. That was very unexpected, but very appreciated.
Oh, that's quite all right. Thank you.
And just for you, I will read the story, Red Ribbons.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
And I hope you find it enjoyable and not too shocking. So thank you. I do appreciate it.
Oh, that's my pleasure.
Okay, keep listening, and we'll go on to the story, Red Ribbons. Okay, folks, that was unexpected, but a very pleasant surprise. So thank you, Cindy. I appreciate your being here. And we have also a few guests, so thank you, guests, and anyone else listening on the phones. If you want to talk to me directly, just hit your one key, and I'll see your phone number and cue you in. This is a story called Red Ribbons, and it's actually a holiday story, a Christmas story that I wrote a year ago around Christmas. I was really anxious to sit down and write a holiday story, and it was just a goal I had set for myself. But I was having real difficulty with it. I could not come up with, you know, something unique and different for the holidays, which is what I was intending to do or wanting to do. And I was talking to my husband about it, and he says, "You're a mystery writer. You write murder mysteries, so why not a murder mystery around the holidays?" So, again, folks, I apologize if it's not what you're expecting, but here goes. Red Ribbons. Kelly was having a hard time finding her Christmas spirit. Her kids were grown and living on their own and cared less about how she celebrated the holiday. They had significant others that took their time and attention. Her husband had no interest either, and she found motivating herself by watching all the Christmas shows unsuccessful. This was the first year in her 40-some-odd years that the spirit of Christmas proved elusive, so much so that the pumpkin wind chimes and fall wreath that she had placed on her front porch in October were still in place. Christmas carols, her favorite music beginning on Thanksgiving Day, had failed to entice her buying spirit. On December 21st, just 4 days before that all-important day, there was no wreath on the door, no tree standing near the fireplace, and no gifts purchased and wrapped. Bah humbug was her attitude, and she could find no way to change it. "I'm not depressed, I'm just not into it this year," she told her good friend Donna over a cup of coffee at their favorite cafe. "You aren't going to do anything this year." "Nope, nothing. I don't understand. You're the woman we all try to emulate, from the handmade gifts to the homemade treats, and dare I even mention the decorating and shopping? If you're not depressed, then what is it?" "I don't know. It just isn't worth it anymore. I tried to give my children the perfect holiday and instill some tradition, but they're grown and uninterested, and I don't want to do it alone." "But to give up completely?" Kelly sighed and warmed her cold hands around her cup of coffee. "Maybe it's time for a new tradition. Besides, look at all the money I'm saving." "Like that's an issue for you." Donna shook her head and sipped her cappuccino. "I know, I'm privileged and ungrateful. That's why I've decided to make a huge donation. Someone who really needs it will benefit. Someone who appreciates the spirit of the holiday." "Does that mean you're not going to have your Christmas party?" "Not this year." "I can't believe what I'm hearing. Everyone loves that party." "Sorry, Jack will be out of town, and I'm just not interested. But I did get you a gift." She handed Donna a red envelope. "Gosh, I feel honored." "Don't. I only thought of it 5 minutes before you arrived." Donna opened the card to find a gift certificate for the cafe they were sitting in. Actually, it's perfect. Thank you. You're welcome. I do value your friendship, and these regular meetings are like therapy for me. Me too. Believe me, me too. Donna reached out and touched Kelly's hand. I'm a little worried for you. This is such a drastic change in behavior. Is anything else wrong? You mean besides the fact that Jack is tied up with his new position at work and I barely see him anymore? No, it's the same old, same old. She checked the time. Speaking of Jack, I promised to pick up some champagne for his Christmas party and drop it by the office. I better run or I'll be late. His party is this evening, and then he's leaving on another business trip. It's almost Christmas. I thought work eased up a bit during this time of the year. His new position has him even busier than ever. He'll be home on Christmas Eve. Then we better go. I have to run, too. I still have some shopping to do before my flight leaves. When will you be back? After the new year. I'm visiting my family for Christmas and then going to Florida for some fun in the sun. My Christmas present to me. You deserve it. Kelly hugged her good friend, and they walked out to the parking lot. Have a great trip and Merry Christmas. You too. They parted ways. Just 5 days later, Donna stood over the body of her good friend and remembered their last conversation. Kelly lay in a beautiful gold coffin, dressed in a crisp white suit. She looked as though she were peacefully asleep. I'm sorry, Kelly. I'm so sorry, Donna told her as she reached and smoothed the blonde hair around her face. Why, Donna? What are you sorry for? Jack walked up behind her and touched her shoulder. She was my best friend. I should have been here. I should have been a better friend. She loved you, and you were a good friend. I'm the one who should ask her forgiveness. I agree, a deep voice sounded from behind them. Please come with me, the both of you. They turned to face a man in a new but poorly fitted suit. He flashed his badge and ID. Detective Mirror stood before them. They looked one to the other and said in unison, Why? Mr. Hart, your wife was murdered. She didn't commit suicide as originally thought. I need both of you downtown to answer some questions, if you please. The hound dog-looking man stepped aside and pointed down the aisle to the door. The rest of the mourners stood in silence as the detective and his men took control of the room. These nice gentlemen will escort you. Two uniformed officers took each one of them separately to the station house. In an interrogation room, Jack paced impatiently until Detective Mirror opened the door. Please have a seat, Mr. Hart. Jack complied, and with his hands folded on the table in front of him, he waited for the next statement from the detective. Detective Mirror observed his subject. Jack Hart was an impeccably dressed, clean-shaven man with salt-and-pepper hair and an attitude of annoyance. Mirror sized him up as someone who thought the world revolved around him, an egotistical, highly educated, more money than sense, white-collar, two-martini lunch slime ball. Clyde Mirror did not like the man who sat before him. Mr. Hart, who wanted your wife dead? I have no idea. His hands flew up with palms open as he sat back in his chair. I assumed she killed herself. She's been despondent, not interested in the usual Christmas celebrations or preparations. How did you know she was murdered? We thought she took sleeping pills, but they don't show up in the toxicology report. Now a full autopsy will take place. Then what killed her? As soon as we know, you will. Her body has been moved to the morgue. This is unbelievable. I'm just glad we discovered the truth early. It's a quick turnaround. Barely 36 hours after she's discovered and you're ready to cremate her? Those were her wishes. She didn't believe in embalming. Ask her attorney. It was spelled out. Along with her will. Yes, well, the coroner is appreciative. It will allow us to find the evidence we need. In fact, let me check on his progress. Detective Mirror got up to leave, but turned back. Mr. Hart, when was the last time you had sex with your wife? What? How is that important? It helps us establish a timeline, that's all. Gosh, I don't know. I flew out on the 21st, maybe the night before. You seem a little confused. Most men know that answer without thinking about it. sorry if I'm not thinking clearly. You just told me my wife was murdered. I was trying to get a handle around suicide, and now this. Jack stood up. Okay, that's fine. Just settle down. I'll be right back. In another interrogation room, his other suspect waited. He entered and sat across from her. Donna seemed to shrink in her chair. With arms folded across her chest, she looked frail and frightened. His heart almost went out to her. Wide eyes set against flawless pale skin and surrounded with hair the color of a starless night. With one flip of his hand, the file fell open and a picture of Kelly Hart, taken in the morgue, lay in full view of Donna. She saw it and pulled away in shock. "Your full name is Donna Mae Firestone?" "Yes," she fidgeted. "You seem nervous. Is there anything wrong?" "No. I mean, I don't know. Why am I here?" "You want to help us find out what happened, don't you?" "Yes, of course." She did her best to relax and dropped her hands to her lap. "Good. Then tell me how long you and Mr. Hart have been having an affair." "What? What do you mean?" She began wringing her hands and found it difficult to sit still. "Come on, Miss Firestone. We've already been to your apartment. We found his clothes hanging in your closet and a picture of the both of you on a bedside table. I assumed Mrs. Hart, your best friend, didn't visit your place very often." Donna lowered her head to her hands. "I didn't kill Kelly. I didn't kill her." "Then you're saying Mr. Hart killed her." "No, I'm not saying that at all." Her head shot up and she looked straight into his eyes. She had the most beautiful deep purple eyes. He cleared his throat. "Good, because he was out of town that morning. We've already checked his alibi." "I was out of town, too. I spent Christmas with my family." "Yes, we've checked. You bought a plane ticket. Actually, two tickets. One to set up your alibi, and the other one you used later that evening, after you killed Kelly." "You used the name Anita Jacobs on that flight." "We're certain it was you. The flight attendant described you to a T, including all the alcohol you consumed. She says she's never seen anyone so upset and determined to get drunk. In fact, she's downstairs waiting for us to put you in a lineup. Do you think she'll have a problem picking you out of the bunch, even without your red wig?" "Shit. Is that all you have to say?" "What do you expect me to say?" Her nervousness was suddenly gone. She now appeared cool and collected. "Well, for one, why did you kill your best friend, and why in such a dramatic fashion?" "She was a bitch. Stupid, overindulged bitch who didn't know how good she had it." "How do you mean?" "I gave him everything. Everything she refused to. And yet he threw me over for her. I performed the kind of sex he said she never would. I did all the things he liked. 3 years of my life. 3 years of being there whenever he called. All that time waiting for him, pretending interest in her problems. And what does he get me for Christmas? He dumps me and tries to send me on a vacation to Florida. Suddenly, she's all he ever really needed. What am I, chopped liver? The bastard. Then why kill her if you're mad at him? I love him. I'll always love him. I knew he'd grieve for a day or two, but then he'd come back to me. But she was your best friend." "She was a good friend," she said thoughtfully. "I thought I was doing her a favor. She seemed so unhappy, and honestly, she was blind to the truth. She blamed herself for everything and never saw Jack as he really was, in love with me." "So you murdered your best friend to get her husband, your boyfriend, back." "Seems so petty, but yes. Tell me how you did it." "I went over the morning of Christmas Eve. I told her I had her gift and wanted to see her before I left. She let me in, and when we walked into the living room, I stuck her with a syringe of phlogosium. It seemed fast-acting and leaves the body almost immediately." "How did you know what killed her if it was supposed to be untraceable?" "The coroner found the needle mark, but we took blood and urine samples the night she was found. Her toxicology report didn't match the empty bottle of pills. It wasn't difficult. The officer on duty that night couldn't leave it alone. Said he had a gut feeling it was something other than suicide. He documented everything and put a rush on the blood test. So I screwed up. In a big way. We found the syringe and the half-empty bottle of drugs in your bathroom an hour ago. Why did you keep it?" "I never thought you would figure it out. Everyone believed it was suicide. I don't know. Honestly, this is my first murder." Continue with your story. Detective Mira sat back and waited patiently while Donna explained the rest. While she was dying, I went to the attic and got the Christmas decorations. Then I put up the tree and set out all the collections she had, all her stupid snowman and those innumerable Christmas trees. She had more holiday junk than 20 people, but I made the inside of her house look like she would have, you know, decorated just the way she would. No, I made it look better. Her pride surprised Mira, but at this point her story mesmerized him. When Jack walked in that evening, I wanted him to find her in the subdued light of holiday candles and with soft Christmas carols playing on the stereo. It was perfect. I even remembered to hang a wreath on the front door. You decorated her house? Why? Now the detective was shaking his head in disbelief. This was a part of the crime even he hadn't foreseen. I thought it would add to the appearance of suicide, like she finally gave in to the Christmas spirit but was too depressed for it to have done any good. I knew she had those pills. I saw them in her purse at the cafe and asked her about them. Her doctor prescribed them to help her sleep. I looked them up online. I knew they would make the perfect tool for suicide. I just emptied them down the sink and left the empty bottle beside a glass. Since the prescription was just a few days old, I knew everyone would assume she'd taken the full bottle. Pretty cool thinking. Why didn't you leave a suicide note? I couldn't match her handwriting, and I knew that everyone was aware of her recent frame of mind. I just figured the scene would speak for itself. Why put a red ribbon around her body and place her under the tree naked? Was this your gift to Miss Earhart? In a way, the last time I spoke with her, I asked her what Jack wanted for Christmas, and she told me he'd said that he wanted her under the tree wearing only a red ribbon. He told me the same thing, only when he said it to me, I was the one he wanted naked under the tree. Then 2 days later, he tells me it's over. I was only trying to give him what he wanted. It's what I did, what I've always done. Detective Mirror left the room and returned to the interrogation room that held Jack Hart. Well, Mr. Hart, your wife's murder is solved. The only thing I don't understand is why you had sex with your wife after you found her dead. The end. Okay, folks, so that wasn't the happiest of Christmas tales. Cindy, what did you think?
Oh, I think you are a great storyteller. You know, you're a really good mystery writer. I love how the characters were very well developed and very well done. I love the dialogue. I love how you developed Kelly's character, that even though she was depressed, she was going to like try and create a new tradition and everything. And then this tragedy happened. I love Donna's line in there saying, well, this is my first murder, you know, and I'm hoping, oh gosh, she's not planning on more, is she? But I loved your story. It sounds so real and it's very, very good.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But, you can see, I don't know why, but I really tried to write a traditional Christmas story and found I couldn't do it. So This was my best effort.
I hope it was a very good effort, and I hope you put it on your blog sometime. I would like to read more.
Okay. I might do that. Maybe I'll come up with one for Halloween. I'll try to get that.
Okay, well,
it would make more sense, I think, to have a cruel murder at a Halloween.
That was a very good murder, mystery murder. I was really guessing because you had your character so well developed, and I thought, well, gee, there must be, you know, until the detective really figured it out. I didn't know until he called her on it, and then she's like, changed character completely, and oh my goodness. So, but thank you so very much for reading it for us, I look forward to reading more of your work sometime.
Well, thank you, Cindy. I appreciate your being here.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much, and you take care now.
Okay, you too. Okay. I'm just going to continue with the show and talk about some of the tips. So, okay, folks. One of the things that happens to a lot of us writers, I think, is that we get a little down, we get a little depressed, we get a little tired of the hurry up and wait. Because if you've ever written a query and sent it out, or you've ever, you know, sent out several chapters and you're waiting to hear the response of that, it can be a hard time of sitting around and just simply waiting to hear what's going to happen. And I've got another person in the chat room, and I want to say hello to Ethan. Thank you for coming by. I do appreciate it. I just read one of my short stories, and you missed it, but I think you've heard it because I've read it at a writer's meeting probably a year ago or so. In fact, I think I shared it with you online once, so you didn't really miss anything. But I read Red Ribbons. Remember that one? It's the Christmas story that ends in murder. Anyway, thank you for being here. I do appreciate your coming by, too. But as I was saying before, one of the things you do get when you're writing is you get a little bit down and you get a little bit worried about what's going to be the future and is this going to work out and so on and so forth. So my theory is if you enter the race, if you set your goal, even write it down, although you don't have to because most of us can do that in our head, but raise your standard just simply by entering the race. Get started. Smile and wave to all of those people on the sidelines because they're there as your support if you go to writers groups or whatever. Know that your reward is to finish. Somewhere along the line, if you started writing a project or a writing project, I mean, your goal is to finish. And the prize is just simply a job well done. So you've already achieved success because you started the race. So your to-do list is shake it off, move forward, set a new goal, smile, choose your topic, and just simply write, write, write. And that's my best advice for today. I also have a little bit more information. Writers groups are a fun thing to get into. And if you're looking for one in your area and you don't know how to meet up with people, you can go to a website, and I think it's nationwide, I'm not sure, but go to the website, www.meetup.com, meetup.com, and they can tell you whether there are any groups, I mean any kind of groups, not just writing groups. This is a site where they get people together to do many things, political, religious, you name it. But there are a lot of writers groups that are involved there, too. So if you're interested in joining a writers group and getting out and meeting people and getting some of the support that maybe your family isn't giving you, or there are, you know, your family does give you good support, you read them something or ask them to read something, and what do they say? Oh, it's wonderful. But that's not exactly what you want to hear every time because you want some real good critique. You want to know if you should change it, where you should go with it. Just a good critique. And if you join a writing group, you can get that there. Hey, Lisa, welcome to the show. I'm glad to see you in the show, too, in the chat room. It's very nice of you to come by. I'm here all alone and talking to myself, well, talking to all you guys. But it's very odd for me to be the one to do all the talking. So, also, there's another group. It's called Pen Writers. It's www.penwriters.com. And they can set you up with local writing groups, too. There's a chapter out in Washington State, I understand, and there's also supposed to be more chapters setting up across the United States. So that's a good group to be part of, and you'll get some very, very great information just by going to their website. So, folks, one of my favorite sayings is, impossible is a word found only in the dictionary of fools. So think about that. Nothing is impossible if you believe otherwise. So if anybody has any tips or tools that they want to share, please type it into the chat room or give me a call at 347-215-9536. You're listening to Conversations with Renee, and we're talking about writing tips and publishing tips. I'm your host, Yolanda Renee, and I'm really happy to be here tonight with everyone. I know my guest was supposed to be T.G. Reaper, but he's got some technical difficulties. He will be here on the 15th, and we look forward to that. He's one of the better horror writers that I've run into. And Lisa wants to know when my next book is going to come out. You know, I wish I had that answer. I'm working on book 2 and 3 right now. I'm working, hopefully, with an agent who is going to sign me up any day. She has read my first book and likes it very much. And I'm hoping that she will sign me up and then take all 3 books and sell them to a publisher all at once. That is what I'm looking to do in the very near future and hopefully before the end of the year. We've been working together for over a month now. And she's got some really good ideas, and I've been re-editing some of my work based on her ideas and her thoughts, and it's a process. It's a process of, you know, rewriting, sending it out, waiting for the response, and then getting some more information and going back and doing it again. But like I said, when you're working with 3 books, I think it takes even longer than when you've got just the one. But it's a lot of fun. It was really, it was awful nice to find somebody who said, yeah, I'm interested. I mean, after reading my synopsis for all 3 books and then getting that response, that was awesome. And the funny thing about it is I had been sending out queries, and they were all about just one book. And I never thought until I met up with a lady from she was actually on the show. She's an attorney, a literary attorney, and she advised me to send out queries about the entire trilogy because a lot of publishers are looking for that kind of continuity. And I did, and it was really very quickly that I got 3 good responses, and right now I'm working with one person, so hopefully that will go somewhere. And yes, Ethan, I do wish it would be that much, but I kind of doubt it. Okay, folks, we're already half hour into the show. I can't believe I've been talking the whole time. And usually, you know what I do with the half-hour break. I always talk about the donation area that takes books, and I've got 3 of them. And the first one I speak on is Books for Soldiers, and that's www.booksforsoldiers.com. The process, you just simply sign on and join the form. You get to meet the troops. You get a user ID, which is needed to use their message boards. To become a guest, all you have to do is register, create a username, give an email address for contact and a password, then complete the form, look for an invitation or an activation in the mail, and that's what the system will send you, and you will need to reply and complete the registration. Or you can become an official volunteer. To provide more security for the troops, they require that volunteers fill out a notarized application and mail it in. And it's a very simple thing to do. It doesn't take much time to get a notarization on your signature. And it's more important, and it's for the security of the troops. But you get to converse with the troops on this site. And you also get a place to send your books, either 1 or 2 or 3 or a whole box. It's up to you. But once your application is approved, you'll be able to send them books, DVDs, games, relief supplies, and you'll have access to the pen pal area and postcard jamboree. On an average, they say volunteers fill over 1,000 requests a month. So get started and go to Books for Soldiers. That's www.booksforsoldiers.com. The other one is called Books for Boots, and it's booksforboots.org. Now, this is where the organization, it's a nonprofit, partners with authors and publishers. And you can donate royalties or books. It's up to you. But the money goes to the VA hospitals, where it's used for special needs and emergencies, such as getting families to the bedside of wounded soldiers. And the books go to the vets in the hospitals. And this program was launched in June of 2007 by an author, Rick Galanis. He wrote The Vengeance Trap along with his wife. And that's a good site. You can check it out yourself. You don't have to take my word for any of this. Just go to the websites and check them out. www.booksforboots.org. Remember, it's O-R-G. That's one thing I always get confused. And I think for a long time there, I was constantly putting it in as .com and wondering why I couldn't get to the website. Duh. Anyway, the third option is also an awesome charity. It's called Shadow Forest Authors. And the mission at Shadow Forest Authors is to encourage every author worldwide and from every genre to donate just one copy of their book to fill a void in reading material and to get paperback books and e-books where they are urgently needed. Authors and supporters standing together to make a difference are humble shadows speaking volumes. That's a wonderful site because they'll also advertise your book for you. I mean, they give you an opportunity to put it right on their website along with a blurb about it. For one book donation, that's all it takes. But they have the opportunity for you to donate almost anywhere in the world. You've got Australia, the United States, of course, the United Kingdom, New Zealand, and Africa. I mean, they've got literacy programs, prison programs, you name it. You can find it on that website, and that's shadowforestauthors.com. So check it out, folks. It's another awesome charity for books. And I don't mind plugging those areas because I know that a lot of folks have books out there because if you're a writer, you're usually a reader, and they do stack up on you. So get to donating them, folks. That's a great thing. Another thing I wanted to talk about tonight was, you know, some tips on writing, some tips on getting published, and I wanted to also remember the folks that I've had on this show all season long, and I've had quite a few people come in and give us some wonderful tips about writing, about getting published, and I just want to mention a few of those authors that have been here. Scott Kessman. And he wrote The Tales of Tanglewood. And then we've got Diane Tiergarten. She's science fiction. Well, she's written nonfiction and science fiction. We've got William Douglas Little. He wrote a humorous novel about his life experiences. And it's a book that will actually make you laugh out loud. We've had Yvonne Mason and her true crime novel. Brandon Ford, his horror novel. And Splattered Beauty. We've had Janice Taylor. She wrote a nonfiction novel about dieting. You know, Move On, All Is Forgiven. S.E. Cox, another horror author. She wrote a great vampire story. Matt Arnold, who is a literary fiction writer, and he's published, self-published three books on his own, and he's an awesome writer. And over 75% of my authors have been self-published authors, and I think that's wonderful because they're really a very talented group of people. Then we had Linda Mooney, and I swear that woman can write a book a month, but she's an awesome sci-fi and romance, a combined sci-fi and romance novel that just blew me away. Then we had a very controversial author, Douglas Ordunio. He wrote poetry and a book about how he posed as a woman and got other women to confide in him. And that, I don't know, was a very moral thing to do. But he did write a book about it, and it's out there. And like I said, we had Ellen Kozak. She's the literary attorney, and she had some great advice for all of us. Linda Ballou, a travel writer, Nancy Lynn Jarvis, a mystery author, and Darren Poole, who also writes fantasy and horror, and he's from the UK. And that's awesome that we can have authors all the way from across the pond call into the show and do an interview. But one of the things that I've learned from all these amazing people is that you have to believe in yourself. You can't let anyone dissuade you from your dream. And that does happen along the way, folks. Well, I've got another caller in the chat room, and I apologize if I haven't been noticing who's online, but I'll open the line. So let's see if we can get this person in the room. 717, you're on the air.
Hello.
Well, hello. How are you?
Real good. Real good. I just wanted to call in about the writing tips thing and just tell a few things that just came my way this last week. And I've been thinking about it all week. And just want to see how what you thought of them.
Well, go ahead. I'd love to hear them.
Yeah. I was at a writer's group on Sunday, and one of the women called me aside, and she was kind of torn. She was saying something, and I thought about what she said most of the week, but what she was describing is she finds, if the writing seems to just flow right out of her, that she feels that she's not doing it right. But if it's really hard, if it really like tears her up, if she's very emotional with what she's doing, when she goes back, that correct her. And so she was just saying, she was using the word masturbation, and she was saying like, if the words just flow out of her, then she's doing it wrong. Like she's just tickling her own mind. But if it was really hard and really like emotional and really strenuous, that when she goes back, that's when she finds that she did her best.
So what did you think of that comment?
The more I thought about it, the more I could see your point. I think if your writing is hard, if you're doing it and it seems difficult, if you're doing it and it's emotional, then somehow you are getting down on through your computer into the system something that's worthwhile. Where if it just seems to flow right out of you and just, you know, go on and on and on and on, that she's right, that there's something just missing on that. And the more I thought about that, the more I thought, boy, you know, which would I rather read? Would I rather read something where somebody wrote 20 pages where you could just see, like, all the emotion that they had and all the struggle versus, you know, if they just sort of flowing right out of them? And I think she's right. I think the more I thought about that, the more I could see her point. And it really kind of got me because I thought, you know, I guess for the best writers, it's not easy. I think like, and you think about like artists, like, you know, who really just tear themselves to bits. Also, I think the same situation where if it's really, really difficult, then I think they have something that's worthwhile.
I can see your point of view, definitely. But I like to think that when the ideas are flowing, because I know when I sit down to write, sometimes the entire story can come to me, and I can sit down, and I have done this, written one book in 36 hours, mm-hmm. and that's a time of complete straight writing, but it's also all shorthand. I mean, it's not full conversations, it's not
right.
even full scenes, it's just getting out on paper the entire idea, and then, of course, mm-hmm. it's going back and rewriting it. But I don't know if that's an interesting point. I mean, because there are a lot of times, because I even go back now and read some of my work, and it'll bring tears to my eyes. So I don't know if that's what you're saying or not.
I think that's what she means. Like if you have your emotion in the thing, if you have, you know, whatever, or if you say to yourself, like, I can't believe I wrote that. You know, it's just too personal. I don't want people to know that. That I think that's the point of what you're getting through finally, and if it's something that when you read it, you know, you like you think like, oh, well, that's cute or something, then there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's whatever emotion's supposed to stir, if it's going to go one way or another or back and forth or something, I think like you have to have planks where you calm people down between them. It's got to be like boom and then you calm, then boom, then calm. But it really, the more I thought about that, I think I can see your point. And she was reading something she did, she wrote it both ways, and it sounded almost the same to me, but to her, like, the one made, the one was much stronger than the other. And I really didn't see the, I mean, I didn't see the difference, but I think she really felt bad about the one and really good about the other, but it's the same thing she had written down and rewrote.
Now, was this nonfiction or fiction?
This was fiction. This was fiction. It was some kind of a love story thing or a romance, I think it was. And, you know, like a broken romance. And what would you call that? Heartbreaker? I don't know. And I, the more I thought about that, I had to drive all the way from Pittsburgh, and I was thinking about the whole way, I could see her point, and I thought about that because you have to think, like, let's just say, like a painting. If you say, like, you know, the guy was nearly insane when he did this, then you're really looking at this, and if you're like, and if it's like, oh, well, I did this when I was on vacation in the Bahamas, you'd be like, well, okay.
No, I see your point. I really do. I think it's important to be honest even when you are writing fiction. Mm-hmm. And you're right, because a lot of people will write, you know, something real that's mm-hmm. that's happened to them and make it fictional and then still hold back with the actual emotion of that piece. And you're right. Mm-hmm. If you go in and put that emotion in there, that does make it more real. I can see that very clearly. That's a good point.
Yeah, then I start thinking of, like, all this, like, series of, let's just say someone has, like, 100 books out. In some cases, you could almost, like, take the one character from the last novel, change the name, and you know it's going to go through this novel. I've seen them like that, and I often wonder, you know, is that really all they ever did? Did somebody just say, take this, change this amount a little bit, and you'll have, like, it's almost exactly, you know, like a cookie cutter that they're doing. And they get away with that because people don't buy every single book. But, you know, when you're all done, I guess, you know, you have to say, did I do that honestly, or did I somehow just, you know, did they make an extra million because they just changed it slightly from what it was before?
I think it's very easy for people who are very popular writers to get into mm-hmm. to get into a rut of thinking that they have to please their readers instead of truly being honest to themselves and their own writing craft. I think that does get in the way sometimes. I could be wrong, but I've seen it and read it in some of the work of some of my favorite authors. Don't you think that happens a lot?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think, like, their agents probably are like, you know, we want a book every 3 months. And can you, you know, they'll probably sit the guy down and say, you know, can you get 10 books out in 4 years? And the guy says, sure, I can do that. And... 3 years or something, and, you know, he goes ahead and he can do it, but, is it pretty much like the first one's all fantastic, and let's just, you know, change it slightly, and we'll put new characters in, keep going and going and going, and I think there's quite a few like that. And so I'll say what you said, it really, like, I was kind of torn on the way back and forth from Pittsburgh, because I had a long drive down Route 80, but, the more I thought about that, I could see her point, and I could see she was really struggling because she was shaking like a leaf while I was talking, to her, I'm trying to get it right in my mind exactly like how she said that and all, and I really could see her point. I really think that if she can put that much emotion and that much sweat into that novel, that it would be a lot better than if she just left all the emotion out.
I agree totally. So do you have some more tips for us? Did you learn anything else at this conference?
No, actually, it was supposed to be a board meeting, and however these happened, I was trying to sit in the back and, like, not be noticed, and then everybody else comes to me and asks whatever, and I was saying, like, why are you coming to me? You know, go to somebody who knows what they're talking about. And but that was one, and I got cornered a couple times, and that was one of the people that cornered me. And I ended up eating lunch with her and talking, and it was interesting because I just did not expect that.
So tell me a little bit about your own books. What's happening there?
Oh, I just finished another edit of The Beachcomber, and I'm not, the very, very tail end. I mean, I've got to change like a sentence or something to get it because it's not quite right, but I didn't think it was much to it, and then I just asked the woman who had never read it before, I said, just read it and tell me what you think, and she started crying her eyes out. I thought, oh, gosh, I didn't want that. To me, like, you're sitting here crying, and it's not supposed to be that sad. It's supposed to be, like, uplifting, but So I thought, well, I don't know if I did it right or not. But that's about living down the beach, and I guess it was.
I think if you can make someone cry when they read your words, then it's got to be pretty darn good.
It's just so emotional. That was about living on the beach and seeing this old guy that I spent the summer with go off, and then somebody who's like prophetic but not really with it describes to me, don't you know how I came here? I'm like, no. He's like, I saw you on the beach and I prayed that an angel would show up and open my eyes. He was there. I was like, what? and so I'm like, and I'm like, you're joking. And then I just asked the girl who was with me, and she's like, I think he's right. And I'm like, oh no, don't tell me I spent a summer with an angel running around Wildwood. But it was different. And I just got to finish the thing up now and get it off because I'm just tired of fooling with it. And I don't know, I'll probably run it through one more time.
Well, take a step back from it, because, it is easy, very easy when you're trying to edit something to just simply get tired of it.
Right.
And you got to step away from it. So how is Blue Ocean's piece doing?
It's doing pretty good. I've got the first signing coming up the 23rd. I have not gone to the other bookstores yet. I've got to just get in the car when I didn't do it. Basically, all the contacts I had at the Borders have all left within just like the last month or two. So I'm kind of starting over, and I'm waiting for them to actually get managers in so I could talk to a manager themselves. I might put part of that off till after Christmas. It might be a little bit easier for me, but I'm going to try to go around and see if I can get just a plain straight signing at a couple of them yet. But it seems to be going pretty well, and it's just hard to market because I'm all still set on my other books and that series. And they're easy to describe to people in market, and it's very hard for me to come up with like a one-line pitch saying this is what Blue Ocean's piece is about, because it's difficult to do that. You almost have to sit down and describe to somebody what it is.
Yeah, I know, and that's a very important part of writing, isn't it? Besides, the writing the synopsis of a book, the pitch is one of the hardest things to do, because you have to get your whole entire novel down to, what, one or two sentences?
Right. And something very quick and very easy and get their interest at the same time. It is difficult. It really is. But, yeah, I just thought I'd call and give you what I've heard on that. And I hope to go by the Library of Congress today. I had to go to Washington, and I could not stop by there because I understood they have a big thing going on there. But I got home from Washington around 4 o'clock today, maybe 3 o'clock, driven up to this morning for work and came back.
Wow, you've been on the road a lot lately.
Yes, and one thing after another.
Well, I appreciate your being here tonight. Thank you very much.
All right, I got to run.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Folks, if you don't know who that was Walt Hunsinger, and he's the author of The Cabin. It's a story about when he was 19 years old, he went to Alaska with two young ladies to build a cabin in the wilderness. Now, he was only intending to go up there and help them build the cabin and then leave once it was done. But it took a little bit longer to build this cabin because there wasn't anything really there when he got there. And by the time he was ready to leave, it was already snowing. He could not leave those two young ladies by themselves, so he stayed and spent the winter in the wilderness with two young ladies, one of them severely troubled, and it's a great book. It's a great read. It's based on his real-life adventure, and you got to get it. It's called The Cabin by Walter P. Hunsinger, and it is just awesome. He also came out this year with another book called The Blue Ocean's Peace, and it's a terror novel. There's nothing real in it, but it's a thriller, and it's also a good book. But now he's working on the prequel and the sequel to The Cabin, because everyone that has read his book is very interested in knowing what happens to those two young ladies afterward, and how did he meet them in the first place. So that's what he was talking about, The Beachcomber, is I think the prequel to The Cabin, and then he'll come out with, I think it's The Farm. He's not on the telephone, so I can't ask him again. Maybe he'll let me know. But I think it's The Farm as the sequel, and of course you know how titles go. Working titles can always change once the book is printed. And can you believe it? Lisa's warning me I only have like 5 minutes left to the show. And that is awesome because I didn't think when I got on here to talk and about the subject that I had to talk about that it would go on that long, that I'd actually quit at a half hour and let everybody go home and do something more interesting than listen to me talk. But I like doing a radio show, and I enjoy meeting the people that I've had the pleasure of meeting on here and learning from them. And I did have a lot of things on the agenda tonight, like how to write a synopsis, some marketing ideas. And he let me know that it is The Farm, folks. That's the sequel. And he's working on The Beachcomber, which is the prequel. But he says he will probably change the title. I also had a little blurb on how to sell your books through speaking and how to keep all of the profits. And if you want to know more about that, you need to get on to the website, www.speakingauthor.com. It's very simple, speakingauthor.com, and you can learn. I mean, you can even get a free copy of her little blurb about how to get into speaking and how to make those book sales by doing that. And, you know, people are constantly looking for speakers, so it is a great idea. And if you have the fear of public speaking, then join Toastmasters, and all you have to do is go on the website for Toastmasters and get that information. That's www.toastmasters.com. They're all over the United States in any local area where you're at. You can find that information, and they will help you get over that fear of speaking. And we've seen it, folks. We've seen people do these speaking engagements and sell hundreds and hundreds of books. So get out there and try doing that. It's a great opportunity also. We're down to 3 minutes, and I just want to say thank you, folks, for being here tonight. I do appreciate your coming by and sticking it out with me, even though we didn't have our guest on tonight. Like I said, TG will be here on the 15th, so mark your calendars for that date. He's an awesome writer, and on the same night, a friend of his who is a poet, and her name is Cynthia Parker, will also be here. So please, join us. I also had a little blurb about creating that pitch. Walt brought it up, so I'll just say it. Use your manuscript title, the one-sentence description, your main character, what he wants, external and internal problems, the resolution, and then how you're going to engage the reader. And that's how you give that pitch, folks. So if you didn't get that, send me an email at YolandaRenee@hotmail.com, and I'll send you any of this information you may want, any of the links to all this information I have here about speaking engagements or writing that pitch or whatever. So thanks, all of you, for coming by tonight. It was an awesome evening, and I can't believe I talked as much as I did. But I didn't do too bad, folks. Of course, you missed the beginning. If you missed the beginning, I read my story. You can hear it in archives. It's called Red Ribbons, and it's a holiday story, but it's kind of an unusual one, so be prepared and be aware. Thanks again, especially since you had to listen to me talk. And thank you, Cindy, for calling in and letting me know you appreciate this show. That's a new one for me, and I do appreciate it. That makes me smile. And, Walt, thank you for sharing your information. That was an interesting conversation and a great tip. So join me next week because we're going to have Debbie DeSantis, who is a romance author and also a book cover designer. So tune in on October 8th and meet Debbie DeSantis. Like I said, October 15th, we will have horror writer T.G. Reaper and the poet Cynthia Parker. Two for the price of one, folks. And T.G. is also a poet, if you didn't know it. October 22nd, I will have Mary Ann McAfee. She's a literary fiction writer, and her book is called Frozen Tears, and it was awesome. I cried for days when I read that book, but it was just awesome. So tune in for that. And then on the 29th, we have a very special Halloween celebration with Real Splatter producer Mike Lombardo. Our favorite film producer of Real Splatter Films will be here. Remember, folks, these shows are archived, and you can listen to them in their entirety. You can also download them from iTunes. This is Conversations with Renee. I'm your host, coming to a close. So thanks, folks, for being here, for listening, and for participating. See you soon. Bye.